Welcome to Heart of Iowa on KHOI Community Radio, a show featuring a patchwork quilt of artists, speakers, and individuals of note in central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Greta Anderson, together with Paul Hertz, and we've got a special guest for the hour, sound artist Alex Braidwood. Alex Braidwood is a faculty member in the College of Design. He teaches in three programs there: graphic design, sustainability and the environment, and human-computer interaction. He also happens to have very distinct facial hair, a long, well-groomed beard. I believe it's a French fork, because there's a kind of two gray strands coming out, so it's kind of parts in the middle. Very distinctive, in case you might have seen him around. But we're not here to talk about his beard. Welcome to the show, Alex.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Today, Alex is going to share some of his sonic creations with us. Beyond the practical subjects he teaches in the College of Design, Alex is a sound artist. He makes sound installations, collaborates with others on sound performances, converts data into sound, and finds other ways to draw people's attention to our natural and man-made sonic environments. We're going to explore some of those projects today. So get out your headphones for the full immersive listening experience.
Yes, many of the pieces kind of go back and forth between the ears because he's recording in space and it takes place that way. Also, if you want to go to the website where Alex publishes most of his work, it's listeninginstruments.com. That's listeninginstruments.com. So, Alex, let's start out with your audio capture of some of the hydrothermal features of Yellowstone National Park in Wyoming and Montana. You spend a lot of time outdoors in nature, and that's where you capture a lot of your sound, and this is a very distinctive piece of audio. Can you set it up for the listening audience?
Sure. So it involved going out to Yellowstone, camping, and one of the things about the features that I was interested in recording are that they are the ones that many people go to, and so part of the challenge was getting there when there weren't too many people around. So it involved spending a lot of time early in the morning, late at night, going out there. And so what you'll hear is you will hear the mud features, the bubbling of the artist paint pots, and hopefully get a sense of what that sort of geological feature is, in the hopes that hearing that sound offers up the same sort of value and in protection that the visuals do.
The value in this is something that we want to protect as a nation. This is a national treasure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the sound being just as much of the value of preserving that space as the visual, as the experience of being there.
Okay, and these are paint pots. They call them paint pots. They're mud, big mud, lakes of mud, sort of.
Yeah, so this one that I'm recording is in the area called Artist Paint Pots, and it's actually a collection of several, I would say, medium-sized paint pots, not even the size of what you would call a pond, more of the size of maybe what you would call a large mud puddle, there are these raised walkways that go out to them and walk around up the hillside, and it's mud with this activity beneath it where there's air coming up, and so that's what you hear with the burble, the gurgling and the bubbling and the popping sounds is this very thick mud with this, these gases that are working to escape.
Okay, well, let's take a listen. And those are the sounds of Yellowstone National Park in Wyoming, where Alex Braidwood, our sound artist and guest for today, recorded the natural features. You didn't get the smell, though.
Nope. Yep. My microphones don't pick up the smell, but if they did, you know, it would be very sulfuric. It's a sort of stinky area.
So maybe that's something for the future. You can have a sulfur detector as part of your microphone system and then transfer that into data. Mm-hmm. Because that's the kind of thing that Alex does, really. He works a lot with data as well as just pure sound. But that was pretty close to as pure a sound as the stuff that I've heard from you recording. Mm-hmm. You know, nature, what's out there, and few birds.
Yep, and they're in the space that recording was made very early in the morning, and that's one of my favorite times to record because that's when, you know, everything is, you know, starting to wake up. So an hour or so before sunrise, hiking out and getting the whole environment, hopefully with as little man-made noise as possible.
Right. So let's take a look or talk about the other side of the gamut that you record, and those are the man-made environments that you draw our attention to through sonic means. I first encountered Alex's work this year on the Art Vacancy Free Floating exhibit. That was a group, Art Vacancy, kind of collective that comes out with pieces every year or every half year, whatever. Last year's, this year's, I'll just say he was recording the sound of water as we went down a river in canoes, but or any other means. But anyway, last year's Art Vacancy project was called Bureau of Infrastructure Tourism. That was your contribution to the Art Vacancy exhibit. And I understand that you loaded people into a van and took them places to listen to things?
You make it sound as if it was against their will. I invited them to come into a van.
Okay.
So just to sort of set up what the Art Vacancy, you know, sort of idea is for anyone who doesn't know, is that first Art Vacancy aligned 10 different artists with 10 vacant spaces in Ames in order to create site-specific installations that would be up over the course of a long weekend. And my space was a van, and it was a van that, you know, we had a certain point where we left from. And so the idea with the van was to take people to different listening areas in Ames that were created because of the infrastructure. And I was really interested in places that are meant for, you know, just sort of being transitional, places that people don't pay a lot of attention to, and even places that aren't necessarily there specifically by design, but are there because of the design of something else. For example, where two roads intersect, the space underneath that area wasn't created to be this amazing concrete acoustic chamber, but that's what happened. And what's there is a walkway. People just kind of pass through it. So what I wanted to do in order to work to bring people to that space, to bring their attention to those sounds, I created this fictitional company, this fictitional organization called the Bureau of Infrastructure Tourism, and I branded it because I do have a background in graphic design. I can't get away from making visual things, even though I work to try to identify as a sound artist. It all kind of merges together with these listening experiences. So the idea behind the Bureau of Infrastructure Tourism was that I would lead tours using this van and providing these pairs of modified headphones that I've created. And if you have a chance to check out my site, you'll see lots of occurrences of variations of these modified headphones. And the headphones are not headphones hooked up to audio sources. It's not the headphones that we have on right now that you would put on while you're listening to music from your mobile device. They are headphones that are based on hearing protection earmuffs that have then been modified to manipulate the sounds as they come into your ear. So then the tourism group, led by me, took people on these timed tours to the different locations. And I had a little placard set up that said when the next tour was going to leave, people would come. I wore a suit. I had a story that I told. I designed a brochure to hand everybody that included a map and some details about you know, the things that we were going to be listening to. And then in the van, I was also playing compositions that I had created from the spaces we were going to go listen to in real time.
Wow.
Yeah, that's really impressive. And
where are some of the locations that you visited in Ames?
Yeah, so the best one was right over here where Main Street goes over grand. You know, there's some stairs that you can walk down, and if you go under there, there's the concrete comes up from the road on an angle, then it flattens out for a sidewalk, and then it goes up on an angle again to the overpass. And if you sit there, if you listen, there's all these amazing tones, textures, and frequencies that come about when different traffic come through. And you can really distinctly hear and experience different volumes of traffic as well as different types of vehicles. So when a truck goes by, you hear this very low rumbling. You really sort of feel it in your gut. If a very fast motorcycle goes by, you know, it sort of like resonates in different ways. If something high-pitched, like a, you know, somebody's got like a squeaky brake or something, you get these sort of high-pitched tones almost entering like right into your mind, it feels like, because you can't really place where they are. And so it's like the city is performing for you. And that's kind of how I frame that experience, based on the amount of traffic because of the time of day, based on how the traffic lights are controlling the flow. These all become elements that are almost repeatable certain times of day, certain times of year. But it is, in fact, sort of this experience of hearing the city perform for you in this little space.
Wow, that's so interesting. Yeah. Is this something that you could hear if you went down there without any equipment?
Yeah, you definitely can hear what's going on. And it is still an interesting experience, even if you're not wearing the modified headphones.
So what do the modified headphones do?
Sure. So if I can try to describe how they're built, that may help sort of inform what they would sound like. So it's these, you know, it's these hearing protection earmuffs that have a hole drilled into the side. So I pull all the foam out, I drill a hole, and then I insert copper tubes. And the copper tubes come out on an angle, and they extend upward, and they are of different length because the different lengths have a little bit of effect on the impact that it has on the frequencies. And so by doing that, it, through the materiality, changes how the sounds are coming to the listener's ear. It adds a little bit of resonance. It adds different frequencies get muffled, different frequencies get amplified, and it is something that you're wearing. And you're aware of the fact that you're wearing it because it is kind of heavy. You know, it's this metal bolted to the side of your head. And just from the fact that you know you have it on, you start paying attention to what you're hearing. So there's a couple of different mechanisms at play. And so being in that space where there's already this bit of resonance from the vehicles, having these headphones on that increase the resonance even more of certain frequencies, and being sort of asked to sit and listen here for a short period of time, all then frames the experience that you have when you're in it. And it was really fantastic. People responded in a lot of different ways. One of the really interesting things is right next door to that is where the – not next door, but just to the south of it – is where the train goes by. And so there was a couple times on the tour when trains went by, and so the sounds of the train would resonate up through. And so people were intrigued by it. They were interested in sort of exploring even just that little bit of space to see what happens if they get up closer to the overpass or if they get down closer to the road. And then a few people even took the time to sit down, close their eyes, lower their head a little bit, and describe the experience as being almost meditative because of the way the frequencies really do, you know, become these big sort of swelly ambient textures.
Right. I can imagine that there's a rhythm, like you say, with the light, the stoplights, mm-hmm. and the flow of traffic.
Hmm. Yeah.
We have a piece that's kind of related in terms of infrastructure for our listeners of wind turbines that you recorded near Spirit Lake. Tell us where you put the microphones and how you set this recording up.
Sure. So I was up in Northwest Iowa near Spirit Lake. I was driving around and I have always been fascinated by wind turbines. I think, you know, wind farms are beautiful. I was excited when I moved to Iowa to see wind turbines on the license plate and the driver's license. These were like really positive experiences for me. And so I was driving around I happened to have my recording equipment in the Jeep because I keep it on me as often as I can. And I saw these two different wind turbines, like two different designs. One's much taller, one's a little squattier, and they're very close to each other. And as I kind of came over the hill, I realized that they're behind this school. It was summer, it was out of session. And so I figured I could probably just walk up there, and it didn't seem like anybody was going to stop me. So I found a little spot to stop. I took a couple pictures that I could use in my collage work. And then just kind of hiked out there like I was supposed to be there, set up the microphones in between them, because once I got out there, I could hear very distinctly that the two different wind turbines were making two different sounds. And so once I got up there, I got, you know, I was very close in between them. I set up the stereo microphones and began recording. And you know, you hear these two different textures. You hear the swirling. You hear sort of some, you know, the things that get talked about when people start to explain why they don't want wind turbines near them or in their neighborhoods. But there was also something really, I thought, really compelling and really charming about the way the two different machines were interacting with each other.
Okay, well, let's listen to that. Okay, you could definitely hear a little bit of squeak in there.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like one or both of the machines might have needed a little bit of maintenance.
Yeah, maybe. And one of them, you know, like I mentioned that they were different. One of them clearly seemed like it had been there longer. It definitely seemed older. And that was the one that was making more of the mechanical sounds versus the more sort of air and whooshing sounds. And the other thing that's in there is there was a construction site off in the distance where they were doing like some road construction. And so there is in the sort of longer file, there's a little bit of construction noise where you can hear the equipment moving back and forth. You hear the backup beep of the,
oh, really?
Of the tractors and things.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I love the backup beep. That's kind of a soundtrack to an urban setting very much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. If you've just joined us, we're talking with Alex Braidwood, a sound artist in the College of Design at Iowa State University. We're talking about what he does as a sound artist, the kinds of environments he records and shares with listeners.
Let's talk about your project on Lake Okoboji with the Iowa Lakeside Laboratory, where you were an artist in residence. You worked with a research buoy afloat in the middle of the lake. There's a picture of it on your website, listeninginstruments.com. But could you describe it for the listener and what this research buoy does?
Sure. So the research buoy is managed by the Iowa Lakeside Laboratory, which is a biological field research station on Lake Okoboji. And the buoy, which is installed in Lake Okoboji, is loaded up with sensors. It has sensors above the water that are getting things like wind direction, rainfall, temperature, these sorts of things. And then it also has a whole bunch of sensors down in the water that's collecting information about some of the chemistry in the water, about oxygen levels and water temperature and things like that, including like a string of sensors that go all the way down to the bottom. So it gets these stratified pieces of information to know what temperature the lake is at different depths. And all of those sensors are – the data from those sensors are reporting back to the, you know, to the internet, to this – to a database every 10 minutes. And so with that data, while I was an artist in residence there, I turned it into a sound composition.
Okay. So it says on your website that each 10-minute interval was compressed into a 1-second sound interval in your composition, or your translation, I should say.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so what I did was I took the data's reporting back at 10-minute intervals, and I took different values from different sensors, and as I step through them, it's stepping through them in a 1-second rhythm. So every 1 second, you're hearing the data from 10 minutes ago. And it always starts with the newest data and works backwards when I start the system, right? So you're always hearing the most recent information.
So it's not just the sounds of nature. It's the sounds of nature faster and backwards.
Sort of, yeah.
And, yep.
And manipulated by, you know, those pieces of information coming in as control parameters. So what that allows, you know, what that allows the listener to get is a different type of experience with that data. So what, you know, what gets reported back over the course of days, weeks, and months gets performed back over the course of minutes. You get to hear these changes. You get to hear this, you know, you hear the value shift. You hear things in the lake you know, as they're, you know, as they're changing over time.
I'm reminded of what you see maybe with weather maps or weather forecasting. You're taking all of this natural data and changing it to a different format, something more compressed, something you can grasp at a glance or at a listen, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And this process is called sonification. So it's sort of the audio equivalent of visualization, mm-hmm. right? And what I find really interesting about it is that it allows for a different type of relationship to develop with this data, with, you know, all the things that are being collected from this lake, from this particular data source.
So just to clarify a little bit, mm-hmm. there are different categories of data. There's temperature, there's, you know, wind, mm-hmm. there's, I don't know, some probably chemical data. Mm-hmm. And just to make an analogy to, say, a band, you know, who would be producing music, certain sort of data are playing a particular kind of instrument. I mean, like there's
That's
different
right.
I don't know how to say, associate one type of sound with one type of data.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And when I talk about it, even if I'm like jotting things down in my notebook or if I'm trying to explain it in writing, I refer to that as mapping the data to a particular either mm-hmm. value or a note or a control. So the system that I wrote, I wrote some code to get that data from the web, scrape it down, save it into my system, format it so that I can build up this, you know, this sort of archive from the database and perform it back, mapping a particular value to either a particular sound or a particular control for like an effect. So let's say this particular value changing controls the reverb on this particular sample, or many of the values are used to trigger like notes on a virtual synthesizer.
Uh-huh. And it could also trigger the volume or mm-hmm. the length of a note or.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Or the pitch, the way the sound file is playing back. Those are all things that are happening in that system.
Okay. Well, this sounds very interesting. Let's take a listen to the Iowa Lakeside Lab recording that you did. And that was a recording of digital mapping of data to sound by Alex Braidwood, who's in the studio here with us on Heart of Iowa, KHOI Community Radio. Alex, that was beautiful. It's very meditative.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
And besides just the pleasure of the textures, what do you hope the listener gets out of this type of sound manipulation of changing data into sound?
You know, I hope that it helps to connect them to where the sound is coming from. And part of that, I think, is because of the story of how the sound came to be. With these sensors in the lake, it's reporting back this data on the condition of the lake, on the state of the lake. And if I could do anything, I think it would be to have that help build the conversation about protecting water, about using things, you know, responsibly, about caring for that, and not even just the lake itself, but the ecology that's, you know, the ecosystem that the lake is an integral part of. So I'm hoping that, like any sort of, you know, information public service announcement type thing, that it could help to bridge this gap between, you know, an issue and an audience.
Oh, that's great. That's wonderful. I mean, I was going to ask you about the water quality, and that's a major issue here in Iowa that we're struggling with, really. Mm-hmm. And the lakes are a big part of that because they don't flow out; they just collect. Mm-hmm. And we've had trouble with cyanobacteria and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Were some of the data that you collected related to water quality?
A little bit in that, you know, again, it's sort of all part of this, you know, it's all part of this large ecosystem. But the sensors that are on there are much more about sort of the state of the lake. It doesn't get into, chemistry of like nitrogen and phosphorus and some of those kinds of things. But, you know, the information that's coming back with like the dissolved oxygen levels and the temperature and when the temperature is going to change seasonally and things like that is going, you know, all of that information tells the scientists and the researchers a great deal about what is going on there and what kind of impact, you know, the lake as part of a larger system is.
And when someone is listening to it, whether maybe it's on a website or it's a display somewhere, do you provide some sort of legend that can help the listener decipher what the sounds mean?
I don't have anything that's on there that's a direct one-to-one. Mm-hmm. You know, that is available. That is a thing. And I do actually on the, if you do go to the page, which is, the project is called, Listening Buoy on the listeninginstruments.com page. There is an example of what the data looks like, that is on that page. And it tells the story about what particular sensors are being used for the composition. But one of the things that I want to do in the composition is to have all of the sounds working really well together. And what is easy to discern in the composition is change, but sometimes what's a little bit harder is to know exactly what is changing what, because I kind of have woven them together to make mm-hmm. a bit of a stronger composition between all those elements.
Hmm. Right.
And things are woven together, like the dissolved oxygen is very much related to the temperature and so forth. You are collaborating with scientists on this project. What was that like for you?
It was completely fascinating. It was the reason why I applied for the artist residency in the first place, was because, you know, this research facility is for scientists. That's sort of why it's there. That's what it does. It is managed and populated heavily by students from the Regent institutions. So the full name of the place is Iowa Lakeside Laboratory Regents Resource Center. It's got to get the words in the right order. I could see the letters. And so being part of this like larger, you know, Regents resource, they branch out into a lot of different places, a lot of different like avenues of scientific discovery and investigation. They've got research projects that they've been doing there for many, 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 many years. And so as finding this opportunity to go there as an artist, I was really open to the whole experience. I didn't know what to expect. I had a general idea of what I wanted to do while I was there. And then the more I talked with the scientists and the scientists who were the faculty members there, I was invited to come along on some of their trips. And I just kind of kept learning more about what they were doing. We ate we ate a lot of meals together, and then things really turned around, things came together during an open studio event when a couple people who were directly connected to the research of the buoy, who I had not had a chance to talk with yet, heard the project, and then we hit it off and were able to have some really fantastic discussions about what it is to use this data in different ways, try to connect to audience and build, you know, these expressive and communicative projects from it.
And I think you told me when we met earlier that someone had developed a yoga practice while listening to this music.
Yeah. Yep. So one of the scientists, he was a professor there. He does yoga, and he leads yoga during the summer sessions. and a couple he really enjoyed the composition when I had a chance to play it for him, and he had emailed me maybe 6 or 8 weeks after the residency ended, and it was just to reach out and say, hey, I downloaded the file from your website and I use it in, you know, to close out yoga practice pretty much once a week. So I was really, really pleased by that.
Understand you're going to be going on the road with this composition, not just the road, overseas to Korea.
Yeah, that's right. Yep. It was just sort of this, you know, I don't know, magical confluence of opportunities where the people who I met at Lakeside who are connected to this buoy really enjoyed the composition and thought it told a fascinating story. That buoy and the researchers associated with it are connected to this larger global network called GLEON. It's a Global Lake Observation Ecology Network. So a bunch of buoys in a bunch of lakes around the world. Every year they have an annual meeting, and I got invited to come to their meeting as an artist to talk about this buoy listening project. And so I'm going to be one artist in a sea of scientists, sort of, you know, I don't know, waving my hands around trying to explain how the data turns into the sound. And so far, the people who I've been in contact with connected to the organization have been really receptive and really intrigued by it. So I'm excited to go. And it's soon. I leave tomorrow.
Oh.
Yep.
Yep.
Okay.
And that's in South Korea.
That's right. Yep. It's in a city called Chuncheon, which is also known as Lake City.
Oh. I'm
pretty excited.
So appropriate.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yep.
You're listening to Heart of Iowa on KHOI Community Radio, a show featuring a patchwork quilt of artists, speakers, and people of note in central Iowa. I'm your host, Greta Anderson, together with Paul Hertz.
More conversation with our featured guest today, Alex Braidwood of the Iowa State University College of Design. He's a faculty member in the Graphic Design, Sustainability and Environment, and Human-Computer Interaction programs.
We just heard about his collaboration with scientists up at Lake Okoboji as an artist in residence, a sound artist working with scientists. You have another collaboration that you have done recently, this one with, I don't know whether you call him an athlete or an artist, but an archer, someone who with bow and arrow who worked with to produce a performance. Can you describe that?
Sure, yeah. So the archer, his name is Kenji Yoshina, and he's a resident of Grinnell, and he works at the Grin City Artist Residency in Grinnell, Iowa. And that's actually where the performance was. So it was part of their semi-annual art and music festival that's called Rurally Good. And Kenji and I met while we were both artists in residence at the same time, and he makes a lot of different things, but one of the things he was making while we were there was he was making his own bows. And so I have a background in, you know, I grew up being outdoors. I'm an Eagle Scout. So like I have some archery, in my past, and we, you know, connected over that. We were shooting arrows. I'm like, man, this sounds amazing. We were in sort of inventing targets that we could find around the farm. And I set up my microphones and we shot, you know, near the microphones, not at them, but, got these amazing sounds. I was like, okay, this is really cool. Like, how can we do something where we can, like, give this to people, this sound of your skill, you know? And so we just sort of brainstormed some things and ended up setting up this gallery of objects in a barn. You know, the barn was the performance stage for the rest of this, you know, music festival weekend. We happened to be the first. We were like the kickoff event for the weekend. So we spent some time in the day leading up to it, hanging all of these objects, different kinds of things, different boxes, speakers, some metal things to shoot, some sandbags to puncture so the sand would fall out. And then I mic'd all of that up. So I mic'd up the entire shooting gallery along with a couple of his bows that he had made. And then the performance happened where he would shoot specific targets. I would capture the sound in real time, start manipulating and building compositions with that sound. And the performance lasted for about 45 minutes. And it was a really interesting chance for me to experiment with the sounds of like force action and materiality of the things that he was hitting. And he was able to really demonstrate his archery skills and his skills as a craftsman. you know, we set up a bunch of different things that were hanging everything from like small Christmas tree ornaments to foam cubes with bells on them. We found different bits of metal around the farm and hung them up. We called them the farm chimes. And
yeah.
So it was, yeah.
You'll hear the chimes in the recording that I picked out.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. And yeah. So it was the interaction of like these different kinds of metals. And then again, because, you know, the visual stuff matters, we painted them all white so that everything fit together, put some black diagonal lines as a kind of cautionary thing. We had to rope off a spot in the barn so that people were like clearly behind him and far enough back in case anything happened. And then one of the more interesting sounds was the way that we decided to end it, which the final thing he did was he shot a hanging sandbag, which dumped sand and rocks onto a metal plate that had a contact microphone connected to it. So that was like the big, you know, sort of bursting finale.
Oh. I think we got that in this recording. But before we listen, I want to ask, why hanging? Why not... You know, why were the objects hanging? Why weren't they mounted on something?
We wanted them to respond to the force and the action of the arrow without being destroyed. And so the hanging actually came about when we were doing some of our early experiments. We had things propped up on hay bales that we shot into. But then we started shooting into different, you know, sort of different shaped foam things, just stuff we were scouring, you know, from these, you know, the sort of attic of this old barn. And I had just at one point thrown a rope over a beam and hung a piece of foam from it. And he shot an arrow into it and the thing just flung around like crazy. And we were like, okay, visually, that's interesting. Uh-huh. Now what can we do to make that also sound and, you know, make some really interesting sound from it? And so we knew that at that point that like it would be really engaging when hitting these targets if they were also then all kind of like spinning and flailing around.
Okay. Well, let's listen to that piece. I edited this. I hope you don't mind how I did.
No, not at all.
Okay.
Oh, we don't have the whole 45 minutes? Okay, that's fine. That's fine. I understand.
Okay, and that was a part of a composition by or performance by Alex Braidwood and an archer, Kenji
Yoshino,
at Grin City,
mm-hmm.
Yep, right?
Yep.
At a Rurally Good Festival. Tell us what was making those sounds then that we heard.
So those sounds were arrows hitting the targets that we had set up in the gallery. There were a couple of different pieces of sheet metal. There were some bells that were attached to foam cubes. There were some hanging metal weights that used to be part of some sort of counterbalancing system in opening a large door. I don't know exactly what it was, but you know, that's part of what the system was. And then you also heard a little bit of the shooting of the sandbag, I believe, where like the sand was dropping down onto a metal plate. That was that kind of like final whooshing sound.
Uh-huh. And how frequently were these arrows being shot? Because there's a sort of rhythm to the piece that I can't imagine that he was shooting at that.
No,
that many arrows.
Nope. And so what was happening was with the microphone set up, this custom system that I built, you know, that I programmed, allows me to grab a sample from real time and then load it into a channel. And one of the things that I wanted to do with this performance in order to kind of celebrate the sound of the archery, the sound of the materiality, was take a sound that happens in a very brief moment, something that happens very quickly, and slow it down in some cases, stretch it out, but then also repeat it so that through the repetition you were able to spend time with that sound as a listener. You were able to not just hear it the once and say, oh, that was an arrow hitting a piece of metal, but to hear it repeatedly in order to start to discern some of the details through that repetition, a very kind of like almost Philip Glass approach to hearing something and again and again and again in order to sort of appreciate what those details are.
Yeah, it's you're using that software, I think, to compose in real time. It's like you're improvising, but you're improvising through the computer that's doing it for you.
Mm-hmm. Yep, yeah. Definitely.
And I can really see how the visual and the sonic just work together in that case, because the viewer can really make those connections between what that material is and the sound that it's making.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it definitely, I think, made an interesting experience. You know, we got some really great feedback about it, and it allowed us both, and this is like the best outcome of a collaboration, was we worked together, we had a good time, and we both were able to accomplish what we wanted to. I was able to experiment with the sound of his actions, and he was able to show off his archery skills and his craftsmanship.
And this has been a really fascinating discussion, talking about the different installations you've been doing. How did you get into doing all this?
Yeah, it's, I've always been interested in sound. I grew up in a house that had music on all the time. My dad is he's a very good acoustic guitar player. He plays finger picks a 12-string acoustic. And so I've always grown up with these lovely sounds and melodies. And my family was always very supportive of music. I was given an acoustic guitar very early and taken to lessons. I ended up playing music, sort of all through high school. I played bass guitar in the school jazz band, as well as like playing in bands. And so then when I went to college and started studying art and design, part of why I got into interaction design and graphic design was because I saw I could combine the things I was interested in with electronic music and visual and motion and programming. So through my time in the profession, I spent a lot of time out recording sounds that became part of motion graphics pieces, that became part of interaction design pieces, sound effects and rollovers and clicks and things like that. And the more I continued to do that, I kept finding these ways of combining my interest with like programming and recording with making installations, making, experiences that people could have. And just over time was able to then continue that fascination with sound, connect it to my interest in cities, my interest in compositions, and my sort of ever-present interest in nature and being outside.
Hmm. Are there very many people who do this sort of thing?
I feel like there's a lot because I look for them and find them, and there are some people, whether it's, the performance sound art stuff or the nature sound recording, there are the sort of luminaries who have been the ones that are really sort of blazing the trail. However, in the art context, sound art is very difficult to present. It always involves bleed over. It's hard to put into space. It's hard to control. If you look at the existing sort of gallery infrastructure, it's kind of hard enough to do like moving image things, much less things that have sound. But I think it's really fascinating the way people take it in different directions and use different types of technologies to put things into space in new ways.
Could you tell us something about the history of this art form?
Sure, yeah. I think, it comes the part of it that I think is the most fascinating to me is the history of it as connected to recording media, because a lot of my work involves like real-time capture or going out. So one of the reasons why I'm so interested in cassette tapes is that the magnetic tape is the reason why I can do what I do. Before then, there was not a stable way to make sound recordings outside of very elaborate, studio-type constructions. And so with like Musette Concrète and, the work of going out, collecting sounds, building composition from found sound all the way through to, the things that were done with like the BBC Radiophonic Workshop with Delia Derbyshire and the things that she did with tape loop compositions in the earliest days of, these sorts of devices. These things were really innovative and really sort of they were inventing completely new territory. And so that is the turning point, not only for the ability to record sound out in space and bring it back, edit it, cut it, loop it, manipulate it, you know, all the way up through the kind of work that like Brian Eno is doing with building tape loop machines and things like that. But it's also around the same time, or around the same part of the timeline where in the, you know, in the early 80s, the compact cassette tape is what allowed us to have a very stable way to take sound and listen to it as we move through space with the invention of the Walkman. So mm-hmm. sound was portable with records and all the way back to wax cylinders, but you didn't listen to those things as you moved. The Walkman was intended, I mean, it's right in the name. You're intended to move with that sound.
Mm-hmm. That chimes back to the show that was on just before you, Bob Anders, with his 8-track collection, always talks about the portability of the sound and how 8-track allowed you to listen while you were driving. And mm-hmm. and then, of course, that was replaced by the cassette and so on. But that kind of, you know, those situations give you a soundtrack for your experience. But in a way, you're also talking about people extracting the soundtrack that surrounds them and paying attention and drawing. So why is it important to draw people's attention to their sonic environments?
The things that I try to respond to the most in my work is to address the fact that we spend a lot of time trying to block all of that stuff out. We've developed, you know, society in a variety of different ways where we continue to put things out into space. These things make noise, and then we spend a lot of time trying to mitigate that noise or trying to avoid it. You look around, you see people walking with, you know, earbuds in. We buy cars that are sort of increasingly quiet so that we can block ourselves out. It's, you know, this idea of like avoiding that kind of stuff is sort of the norm now. And as a designer, as a maker, as a person who puts things out into space, I think it's important to pay attention to all of the sensory information that we have and all of the sensory information that we can design when creating experiences. And if we think back evolutionarily, our ears have provided a lot of information and are credited with being one of the reasons why we're able to survive as a species. Our ears are always on. It doesn't matter if we're sleeping or awake. We hear in 360 degrees. All of this information has allowed us to know if we're about to be attacked or what kinds of things are happening in our environment. And we have now developed enough technologies that we're blocking out a lot of information of what's happening around us. And so my goal with a variety of these projects is to allow some attention to return to that in the hopes that, you know, it impacts how people experience space, how people, you know, experience different locations and maybe even each other.
That's fascinating because with the eyes, we have our eyes are not 360. We don't see like the common housefly does mm-hmm. all in all directions. It's very directional. And therefore, it's, you know, just a part of the whole, mm-hmm. whereas the sound, if you are listening in 360, you have a much bigger picture, mm-hmm. to use a visual metaphor.
Yeah, yeah. So, yep. And we can turn our vision off. We can blink. We can close our eyes and have no visual input. We can't do, you know, it's a very common phrase in sound studies. Our ears don't blink. We just, that's not a, it's not a thing that we have the capability of doing.
Yeah. What are some of the applications? How are people using these concepts in other fields in out in the world?
I think a lot of it sort of, you know, from my perspective, comes to this idea of experience design. So figuring out what it is to consider the acoustics of a space based on like the intent of that space. If you're designing a library versus a fast food restaurant, taking in the acoustics of all of that as you're designing that experience, and also thinking about the functionality of the sounds that are being created. So, for example, electric vehicles are a fantastic example. When, you know, we got rid of the combustion engine, they are too quiet for the visually impaired. And so now we have this thing in noisy cities that is quiet, but it's too quiet. It's dangerously quiet. So they have this opportunity to hire designers to design the sounds now of what that vehicle is going to be. So again, figuring out like what is that sound in that space in a way that's the most effective without being completely disruptive, you know? And that tension is really like an extension of a lot of these things that I think are happening.
Yeah. What about specific examples like architecture here in Ames?
Yeah, you know, I think to me the places that are the most interesting again are these like these non places.
Accidental.
Yeah, back to the art vacancy.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. You know, because like another really interesting space is where Lincoln Way crosses Squaw Creek. You can walk down underneath there, and you get this fascinating interaction of the traffic with the river as it flows by. And one of the things that I think is really interesting there is you start to hear that there's not a huge difference in the sounds that traffic makes versus the water that's going mm-hmm. by. And sometimes when we start to think about the sounds that bother us, context becomes so important. Where if we can sort of maybe refocus our attention, maybe we could figure out a way that traffic doesn't bother us so much if we started to perceive it almost as like crashing waves or something like that.
Yeah, I'm picturing the Coriolanus Kotze movie mm-hmm. where they yep. speed up the traffic and it becomes almost a very natural rhythm mm-hmm. and nothing at all to yep. be upset about.
Yeah, and then, you know, another great example architecturally just as like an invitation is in the College of Design. It's a large concrete building with a big open center atrium. And the sounds in that place are fantastic if you're okay with lots of sound happening. But what I love about it as an educator, as a participant in that community, is that it doesn't take much activity to feel like there's a lot of activity. And that energy when, you know, it's around lunchtime or when classes are switching or when there's a presentation or a critique going on in the main atrium area, it's 5 stories tall, it's all open, it really becomes this, you know, this sign of all of this, you know, energy.
A hive mm-hmm. effect. I wish all buildings were designed, included the expertise of an acoustic designer, especially places that are designed for children to learn and play in. You know, so many kids are oversensitive to mm-hmm. to noise stimulation. And you've worked with youth. I don't know if we have a whole lot of time to discuss it. Can you just give us a snapshot of what you've done with youth?
Sure, yeah. I've done a few different – I do these listening instrument workshops with kids. And, you know, I described earlier the modified headphones with the, you know, the earmuffs and the copper pipes coming out of them. Well, those are a really sort of fascinating thing to experiment with design, with materiality, with sketching, with experience. And so I have this kit of parts that I bring in and the kids can play with all these things from the hardware store to make new listening experiences that they can then wear around and explore either their school or our school if they're coming to Iowa State.
Oh, they must just love that.
Yeah, it goes over really well. Plus, it's a pretty cool photo op.
Yeah. Yep. And finally, you have a release coming out by Maximum Ames. Tell us about it.
So it's over New Year's this past year, I was an artist in residence in Alpine National Park, which is in Australia. And I made my time there was devoted to hiking up into the mountains and making nature sound recordings. So that's what this cassette is. It's one side is the clean nature sound recording.
Did you say cassette?
Yeah, it's a cassette release. It'll have a digital download, but it is a cassette release. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about it. And because it's a cassette, it's one track on each side, mm-hmm. and it's long. It's going to be about 30 minutes long. You have to listen to it all the way through because that's how cassettes work. You don't get to skip like on a CD. And so one side is the pure nature sound recording, and then the other side is one long sort of one ambient composition that I made with a variety of sounds collected, including rain, including some activity from the small village I was staying in, things like that.
Does anybody have a cassette player anymore?
I do.
Speaking as a local music DJ here on KHY, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, I'll have to dust those off. I won't send mine to Goodwill yet.
But that's why it has a download available as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep, definitely.
All right. Well, you've been listening to Heart of Iowa on KHOI Community Radio, a show featuring a patchwork quilt of artists, speakers, and individuals of note in central Iowa. Our guest today has been Alex Braidwood, faculty in the ISU College of Design. And you can find out much more about Alex's work at his website, listeninginstruments.com. And thank you so much for joining us, Alex.
Yeah, thanks for having me in. This was really fun. I appreciate it.
We've been your hosts, Greta Anderson, and I'm Paul Hertz. Our theme song is Fisherman by Leo Kottke from his album 6 and 12 String Guitar. We also heard The Sound of Silence by Simon and Garfunkel. Heart of, and numerous compositions by Alex Braidwood. Heart of Iowa airs every other Thursday at noon and 7 p.m. You can listen to this show again or share a link with someone by visiting our website, khoifm.org. And an article about this show and a link to the download will be available as well.
If you know of an artist or speaker you'd like us to feature on this program, contact us at 292-2878. That's 292-2878. Or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. As always, your role as audience and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.